It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.
Hello and Merry Christmas. This is Kurt Frankum, leading LDS. I am posting this interview, I'm recording this interview, the 5th of December. So by the time it's posted, it should still be Christmas time. I wish you all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And it's a fun time of year. Am I right? So today, if you're new to Leading LDS, I need to mention that this is a little podcast that I do with the help of many others. And we sit down typically with leaders, talk about leadership stuff, tactics, approaches in the context of the LDS world. And so if this is your first time hearing the Leading LDS podcast, I encourage you to subscribe and check it out. And there's a lot of good information, is not only for leaders, but any members of the church learning to improve their experience on Sundays and every day. Today is a very unique interview because I'm interviewing Jacob Khalil, and he is a BYU student who grew up in Texas, and he was not baptized till he was 18. And the way this interview came to be is a few weeks ago when the policy change came out, my buddies and friends over at This Week in Mormons, go check it out. It's a great podcast. Very funny guys. Keep you up to date on Mormon news. But they contacted me and said, hey, why don't you come on and be part of our panel, and we'll discuss the new policy changes. And the policy changes being that the children raised primarily in a home with same-sex parents are not able to receive any ordinances until they're 18, and they can make that decision as an adult. And so we talked about that, had a good discussion. I encourage you to check it out over at This Week in Mormons. I'll link to it on the show notes here. But had a good discussion. And then after that, people commented on it. And one individual commented about that they have a nephew that had to wait till he was 18 to be baptized. And that piqued my interest. So I reached out to him and said, hey, tell me more about this. And he did, and introduced me to Jacob Khalil. And I realize that his situation is not directly related to the handbook changes and the new policy. He was not raised in a home with same-sex parents, but he was raised in a home where one parent was LDS, just not very active, his mother. And then his father from the Middle East has a Muslim background. And out of respect for his father, who asked him to wait to be baptized until he was an adult, he did that, but still remained very active in the church. And so I invited Jacob onto the podcast just to tell his story and ask questions. And my intent here is not necessarily to make any statement about the policy changes, but mainly just to help leaders that may have a similar situation where you have a youth that for some reason or another, they cannot be baptized until or receive any ordinances until they're 18. What are some good methods and approaches to fellowship that youth along and encourage them and make sure that they don't feel like an outsider? And Jacob had a great experience with great leaders and youth leaders, bishops, and I think this is very important to share. So listen to this, share your comments and thoughts. If you have additional questions for Jacob, you can comment on this post. I'll make sure that he reads them and responds. So here's my interview with Jacob Khalil. Today we have Jacob Khalil. How are you, Jacob?
Doing well. How are you, Kurt?
Good. I appreciate you taking some time to chat with me. And I know you're a busy college student, and it's a Saturday morning, and you probably sleep until at least 11 or 12, right?
Yeah. Well, I try not to, but sometimes, you know, but it happens. Good.
Hopefully you're out of that phase of life like I was in college. So cool. Now, and you're down at BYU, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And the reason I wanted to have you on, this came about through various connections with individuals, but I was on the This Week in Mormon podcast discussing. They invited me on there just to give my point of view after the recent policy changes. We're recording this in we're in December of 2015, but these changes, I believe, happened in November, if around there anyways, November 2015. And the guys over at This Week in Mormons asked me to come on the podcast. And from there, we discussed the policy changes where if a child of that's living with their primary residence with the same-sex couple, the policy is the church will not allow them to be baptized or receive any ordinances until they're an adult at 18. And through that, we had comments come in, and Jacob, your uncle, actually contacted me and said that you had a similar situation, not exactly the same, but you were in a situation where you waited till you were 18 when it was you were an official adult to say, yes, I would like to be baptized, and I'd like to get into that a little bit. But first, Jacob, let's learn about you and kind of get some background just to create some perspective, a framework to who we're talking to. So you're a student at BYU, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And where are you originally from? Where'd you grow up?
So I'm from the Houston area, a town called Sugarland, Texas.
Oh, okay.
It's just south of Houston. I was born and raised there. Born in a family. My father's from the Middle East, and my mom's from Louisiana. Come from a family of seven children.
Wow. So how did your parents originally meet?
When my dad immigrated, he was about 18, going to college at the University of Houston. And my mom was working in the area, and they were just introduced by some friends and just kind of hit it off that way.
Cool. And we'll get into the details of your upbringing. Obviously, that's sort of the focus of this interview. But later, obviously, you were baptized at 18, and then did you go on a mission a year after? Or?
Yeah, so almost exactly a year after, I went on a mission to Colorado Springs, and I've been home for about a year and a half.
Oh, great. Cool. Yeah. And you are, your uncle sent me a link to your Facebook page, and you've got some pipes on you. You know how to sing.
Oh, well, yeah. I guess I sing sometimes. Yeah, thanks.
Oh, yeah, you're being a little modest. And I asked you, you're not part of the Young Ambassadors. That's sort of the more popular group that people know from BYU. But what's the group you're in at BYU?
Yeah. So right now I'm into the BYU Singers. We're more of a classical choral group of about 40 people, and we sing more traditional choral music. We're also a touring ensemble. We toured China this past summer.
Oh, cool.
And we're touring the United States, going to Arizona this summer. And, it's a really great experience. It's definitely one of the highlights of my time at BYU.
Cool. And now is this a group that BYU put together, or just students at BYU, or does like BYU fund it officially, or how does it work?
Oh yeah. So it's an official group of BYU. It's part of the School of Music. And, I'd say about half of the students in the choir are music majors, and it's a requirement in the music major to be in an ensemble. So you kind of have that dynamic of, people majoring in music and other people who just enjoy singing. And I'm a music major. And so, that's one of the reasons why I'm in the choir.
Great. And what year are you at BYU?
This is my third year.
Okay. And what do you hope to do with your, it's a vocal performance degree, right?
Yeah, that's right. So that's a great question. So there's actually quite a few things I can do. I'm actually studying classical voice. So I can do a lot of things. Mostly becoming an opera singer is probably one of the top options.
Oh, cool.
So I might end up doing that here, or I might have to go somewhere in Europe to sing, because it's a little more popular there. Uh-huh. But anything in the classical music genre, or I also sing quite a bit of jazz and musical theater as well. So nice. Anything in there.
Nice. So, and what stands out to you about the opera genre as opposed to running to Broadway or doing, those other types? Obviously I'm not very experienced in this area, but anything specific about opera that you just love, that you're passionate about?
Oh man, that is a good question too. So opera is just such a good way to express. I feel like the vocal production is just completely you are getting the most out of your voice, I feel like. Because in opera, a lot of people don't know this, you don't have a microphone. And so you're on stage, you have a full orchestra, and you have to work out how to sing over that. Wow. And so the way you're taught to sing is just really getting the most out of your voice, where like you're just working with your air and all of the resonances that you can make in your head in order to project. And I think that that's really, really amazing. And I think that a lot of those skills can transfer over into other genres as well. And so I mean, that's why I like it, because I think I'm getting a lot out of my voice that way. But I really do love the other genres as well. And I think that they all kind of have their place. I'm not only specific to opera, but I really do enjoy it for that aspect.
Cool. So is there a YouTube page or a website where if people want to sample the BYU Singers music, anywhere they could go to listen?
Oh yes. Yeah. There is a BYU Singers page. We have a Facebook page, and there's also a YouTube channel that they can check out.
Cool. Yeah. And I'll link to that. I'll make sure I get those links from you so that people can check it out. And I appreciate, I'm obviously very naive of the details of these things, but I appreciate a good vocal group, and, you know, I love putting it on during Sunday or whatever. And
oh yeah,
it's a great way to fill the spirit. Obviously, you've experienced that on a daily basis. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Now, let's see. So you, and you're not currently married, right?
No, I'm not.
All right. And you've been home from your mission about a year and a half, you said?
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Cool. So you're going to finish school and move on to life, touring the world of opera, right?
Yeah. That's the plan.
Cool. Well, let's jump back a little bit and talk about your upbringing a little bit. What, you obviously mentioned your parents, but what about your family made it a unique situation in the Mormon world that you were needed to wait till you're 18 to get baptized? So if you want to just start from the beginning and tell your story, I'd be interested to hear it.
Oh yeah, of course. So I feel like I should say, in order to set this up, my grandparents are actually members of the church. They joined when they were probably in their 30s. And my mom, their oldest child, was 12. And this is actually an interesting story I feel like I should share. Just,
yeah, please do.
Because my grandmother was the real reason why my family's involved in the church at all. And she actually passed away this past week. So I feel like I just need to share this.
Well, this is a great opportunity to honor her and tell her story for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they got introduced to the missionaries, and they were kind of taking their time. They were being fellowshipped well and being taught. And after one lesson, my grandmother just turned over to my grandfather and said, called him by his name. She said, "Rick, I know this is true. We need to be baptized." And she knew it. And my grandfather wasn't too sure yet, but he knew that my grandmother couldn't lie. And so they joined in faith, and they were married in the temple shortly after, and they've been active their whole lives. And having that as an example surely was helpful. But also, that being said, just getting into my personal situation, most of my family members, they aren't that active in the church. They aren't very opposed to the church, but they aren't active in the church. And I do think that just a lot of really, really miraculous things happened for me in order to come to the knowledge of the truth. When I was probably 8 years old, I had a really good Cub Scout leader, actually, who would drive around the neighborhood. She knew I would be playing outside with my friends, and for Cub Scout activities, even though I wasn't a member of the church, I was a child of record, she would find me and my brother and come and take us to these Cub Scout activities. And most of the time, I guess, like we were young kids and we would kind of reluctantly go. Right. And then over time, I think that she was released and actually we got older, so we weren't Cub Scouts anymore. And so we kind of stopped going to that. It wasn't until after my mission that I talked with this Cub Scout leader, and she actually told me, well, first off, I went and thanked her for being so consistent in her calling and really giving it her all to helping to plant those seeds. And what she told me was that the reason why she was so consistent in helping me to come to those activities was because she knew I would serve a mission one day. And I had no idea that she had that in her mind. And she actually said that she would tell people that sometimes, and people would say, "Oh, you're crazy." Because it was so far off. And how many times do you see those families who are just not that involved in the church, and they have these children who can come to these activities, and maybe they don't, and you don't really think that they will. I guess that there's a small chance a lot of the time, but she had that perspective and faith. And as you can imagine, it was a really tender experience for me to hear that.
And how old were you when she was inviting you as this Cub Scout leader?
Let's see. I was probably probably 8 to 10. It was around that age. Yeah.
And you, at that point, you had never consistently gone to church. Your mother was a member of the church. Is that right? Or still is?
That's right. Yeah, she is.
And so did she ever encourage you to go or strive to create that experience in your life? Or?
Yeah. So yeah, that's an interesting thing. So my mom hasn't ever really had a doubt that the church is true. She hasn't really attended that much. So growing up, at home, she taught us how to pray, and she did teach us a lot of principles of the gospel. That being said, my father's a Muslim. And so there was always that, that kind of a, like, I don't want to say like a divide, but it was always kind of open to what we would want to choose to do.
Yeah.
Because we had that understanding that our father, he believed this, and our mom believed this. And so we would have to choose one day. And so we kind of learned a little bit about both, but I would say mainly because we spent the most time with our mom, we did learn a lot about the gospel of Jesus Christ. We just didn't actively participate in a lot of things. So when I got to the age of, I was in the eighth grade. I was about maybe 13, about to turn 14. I just got to the point where I realized I really wanted to have this, like, I wanted to have a change in my life. I saw a lot of members of the church at school, and I knew who they were because of that association when I was about 8 to 10 years old. And I saw the kind of lives that they were leading, and I wanted to have that kind of happiness and that kind of a direction in my life. And so I just made the decision that I would just attend church. I just wanted to attend church and try to live the way that they did. And so I asked my mom to drop me off at church every Sunday. And I probably did that for about 5 months, I'd say, just being dropped off at church, going to the ward. And I was completely active in the ward. And then I asked my father if I could be baptized. I wanted to be baptized because I saw this change that was happening in my life. But he asked me to wait until I was 18. He wanted me to make my decision as an adult. He would rather not have me do that when I was a minor, and, like, I guess give his consent for it. And yeah. So I honored that.
And at this time, was your dad, during your growing up years, did he ever say, "Hey, you know, that's great, you're going to this Mormon church, but hey, you should come check out, you know, my church, or come to my mosque every so often"? I mean, was he, encouraging you the other way as well, or?
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe a little bit. He, more than anything, he just wanted to make sure I knew what I was really, getting into. And, like, I think that part of it was that, that my dad at the time, he didn't attend the mosque as regularly either. And so I didn't, I didn't quite have the same opportunity to go to his mosque, but he was, but I think he wanted me to look into it. And he did mention a few times, I would like you to read the Quran. And I still plan to, but, that was about all the encouragement I think I got from him.
I see. But as a teen, you weren't necessarily delving into the Quran, or, you were more focused on kind of following the example of friends you had at church and going that direction.
Yeah. That was the main thing.
Okay. And this, this Cub Scout leader that you mentioned, was she in your ward all throughout your teenage years, and you interacted with her there?
Well, when I got to high school, I changed wards, and so we weren't in the same ward anymore.
Okay.
But she was nearby, and I saw her around, and she saw that I had actively started coming back to church again.
I see. And then, So how old were you when you changed wards?
I was about 14. I was a freshman in high school.
Okay. And so that was about the time that you were really making a commitment in your heart to move forward with the LDS church.
Yeah. That was, yeah.
And so when you went to that ward, did everybody assume you were baptized, or then a clerk came to you and said, "Hey, I don't see your records here," or how did that work out?
Well, I think that they knew that I wasn't a member. I'm pretty sure the leadership knew I wasn't a member, but I think that a lot of the members of the ward, they just assumed I was a member because I was coming regularly and I had my white shirt and tie, you know, and and I had made friends and stuff. So I think to some people it was a shock, but to others, I think that they knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you ever feel like sort of an outsider that's on the inside? I mean, for example, when the youth temple trip would come up, or you'd see your friends pass the sacrament, any feelings like that, or did your ward do anything to help reconcile those feelings?
So, there were times, I mean, I really wanted to be up there helping to prepare and pass the sacrament, and a lot of the friends I had made were up there doing it. I was a little discouraged for a little bit, but I talked with my mom actually about it. And, she said, being a believing member, that wasn't so active. She said, although you can't be baptized and you can't hold the priesthood yet, you can do almost everything else that they do except for exercise the priesthood. You can live the same way. You can go to all the meetings, and you can have pretty much the same life. And so, I mean, that was an encouragement for me, although I couldn't attend the temple yet and I couldn't pass the sacrament. I could live the same way, and I could live as if I was a priesthood holder already. And that was also a motivation for me, to keep on coming back. Cause I knew that one day I would have that, those opportunities.
And speaking of that, sort of that spiritual experience you had, even as a non-member attending the church, did you still have, you know, spiritual experiences through, I mean, feelings of the Spirit, the Holy Ghost, strong guidance. What I'm getting after, did you feel like you missed something because you didn't have that quote unquote gift of the Holy Ghost in your youth?
Okay. Well, the way I talk about it normally is that, yes, I did have many, many spiritual experiences. And that's how I came to a knowledge of the truth. I mean, as you know, it's like not possible to get a testimony without it. But I did notice a clear difference after I was baptized, that there was more. It's not, sure, I guess I was lacking some because I acquired more, but it was more of, yes, I was having these consistent spiritual experiences at church. And then after I was baptized, there was an increase. I remember there were some things that I was able to overcome. There were things I improved upon after I received the gift of the Holy Ghost. And I really do know that is a true gift, that comes after baptism and confirmation.
Cool. What would your message be to those that are in a similar situation, that they sort of feel like cheated a little bit, that they have to wait for that gift of the Holy Ghost? What encouragement would you give to somebody in that same situation?
My thought is to really focus on what you can do rather than what you're missing out on. I think just kind of like what I said about the priesthood, like that was for sure what kept me going, because I knew that I could live all the principles of the gospel. In essence, I could be an active member of the church, even if I wasn't able to receive all of the blessings from all of the covenants I knew I could make in the future. I just had to do everything I could at that point. And that being said, I know that there might be situations where maybe your parents would rather you not go to church sometimes, or maybe not go to activities sometimes. And I think that it's also important to maintain those relationships with your family. And I'm so grateful that I was able to, wait until I was 18 in order to respect my father in that way. Because I think if I did everything I could in order to be baptized early, I guess in my case only, I think it would have hurt our relationship a little bit. I don't think that's always the case, but in my case, it would have. And so having church leaders, stake presidents and bishops and others that really encouraged me to wait till I was 18, per my father's request, I think that was so helpful. And just doing everything I could otherwise to live the gospel was so helpful in that waiting process.
Cool. Now let's talk about those youth leaders and the bishops that were in your life. I guess, so when you moved to your new ward, there's obviously a bishop there. And did you have multiple bishops, or was there just one bishop during your youth?
So my ward in high school, it was one bishop.
Okay, cool. And let's just start with that relationship between you and the bishop. Did you still have regular youth interviews? What was that dynamic like?
That's actually something I wanted to bring up. My bishop actually, he treated me like any of the other youth. He would have me in for those meetings. He would have me in for youth meetings. I think even when he did the temple recommend interviews, sometimes he would pull me in. He wouldn't ask me that all of the temple recommend questions, I guess, but he would have me in just as a regular, here's time to touch base type of a thing. And I think that was very useful. And it did help me to feel like I was a part of the same thing that all of my, my peers were.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, I guess it would. I'm thinking of time when I was bishop, and I could have just said, you know, well, he can't receive a temple recommend because he's not a member. So, you know, maybe we'll just have an interview here and there. But even just to make you feel included by asking you similar questions, and because they are important questions for youth to answer and to kind of measure themselves spiritually. But still feel included with those that were in your quorums and your friends at church.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, it really was great.
Now, what about your youth leaders, young men leaders, scout leaders? Did you go through the traditional scouting program?
I did. Yes, I did.
So that's one of the many things that you could do, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I attended scouts. I got my Eagle Scout.
Oh, congratulations.
I was 18.
Wonderful.
Yeah. 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 With the help of a lot of leaders. And my, there were times, like I was an active participant in priesthood quorum activities and in the lessons in priesthood on Sunday. But like, I didn't even feel like I was the one in the ward who like, okay, we have Jacob who's a non-member. Let's make sure he has like a specific kind of experience, or let's call on him all the time about how his experiences are outside of the church. But it really was like I was a member of the church. I was treated like any of the other members of the quorum, which I think was so important.
Now, what about the dynamic between the ward leaders, young men leaders, and your parents? Obviously, your mother was open to it. Did they strive to reach out to them, or what? How did that relationship go?
Well, I think at the point that I was coming to church, there had already been a lot of reaching out to my family, and I think that I was actually kind of a result of that, because of that reaching out. They were just kind and open and very welcoming. And whenever they came to church, they were welcomed. There wasn't necessarily like, for instance, we didn't have missionaries in my home that much when I was being active in the church. I think, now I can't speak for the leadership in my ward at the time, but I think that their thought was because I was active in the church and I was totally going through with it, that was their way of reaching out. And I think that probably probably in my case, it was probably the best way to reach out, because now I'm able to share the gospel with my family and just be an example and be a family member more than maybe missionaries who would be there for a few months and transferred out, or, you know what I mean? I think that was their idea of reaching out.
Cool. And as I ask this question, I'm not looking for you to throw anybody under the bus or speak ill of anybody, but I guess sometimes in the church, there's this unintentional offense that happens. You know, sometimes, for example, for singles in the ward or those that have been divorced, you know, they've gone through this traumatic experience of that their perfect Mormon family is kind of broken up, and then they go to church on Sunday and sing "Families Can Be Together Forever," and nobody means to rub their nose at anything or harm them. Was there anything like that where it would be good for people to understand, you know, if you have a youth in your ward in your situation, here's some things not to do or avoid doing, saying this or that?
Yeah. Okay. Probably the only comment I have about that is kind of avoid absolutes when there isn't an absolute there. Like, I guess there are opinions and then there's true doctrine, I guess. I mean, the true doctrine is that our families can be together forever and you have to be sealed in the temple. But I mean, but ever looking at someone who maybe their family isn't sealed in the temple, or they're going through some kind of a sealing cancellation or something like that, and saying your family won't be together forever, or just assuming things that maybe we don't have all figured out yet. Like, I would say just avoiding that. Probably the best thing to say that I liked hearing was that it'll all work out the way it needs to. And there's a lot of things that we don't understand, but it'll all work out the way it needs to. as far as that goes.
Cool.
So you've had the somewhat traditional experience as a youth in the church, other than the few, you know, just skipping the temple trips, or, but your leaders really made an effort to help you feel normal in your ward. And that's inspiring to hear. So you turn 18. Was it throughout your youth, you're just, it was sort of the thing of, hey, yeah, two more years and I'm 18, or one more year and then I'm there. I mean, was it, were you constantly sharing that, or how did it lead up to the baptism?
Yeah, so I would say, like, there was anticipation, but at the same time, I mean, I was active in the church. It just felt like such a natural thing. And then I would say, I started telling people, like a few months before, yeah, I'm going to be baptized on my 18th birthday, and I want as many people to be there as possible. And it was just kind of a natural thing, because I already felt like I was a member of that ward.
Cool. And leading up to it, what was the relationship with your father like? Was he just continue to follow his word and say, yep, you're almost 18, then you can make the decision? Or was there any disappointment there or encouragement elsewhere?
I'd say probably at first there was a little bit of a disappointment, because he wanted me to really make the decision on my own and make sure I knew what I was doing. And maybe sometimes he felt that maybe he could have given me more of an opportunity to see where he was coming from. But I think all in all, at least now, he's really happy with the choice I've made because of the direction that I'm going, and because I'm really living my faith now, he's really proud of me for doing what I know is true now. So I think in all, I mean, it really has worked out well in that way.
Cool. So it's safe to say that you and your father have a great relationship.
Yeah, we do have a good relationship.
And what about with your mom? Was she just excited that you were planning on being baptized at 18, or what was her encouragement during those weeks leading up to your baptism?
My mom was very excited for me to be baptized. Like I said, she does have a testimony of the church, and she was really, really excited for me, and was really moved at the baptism as well. And I always had her support.
Cool. Great. And then the baptism happened on your birthday?
Yeah. Yeah. Right on my birthday.
Cool. And who baptized you?
That's an interesting question, because my brother, someone I consider to be my brother because of how close I am to him, part of the way through high school, when my parents got a divorce, I had the opportunity to move in with another family for a couple of years. And because of how close I got with that family, I just consider them family. And so, so my brother, who's a member of that family, he baptized me.
Oh, great. I'm sure that was a special experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was.
Now, did they ordain you to the office of elder, or did they, I mean, it almost seemed, obviously in a more traditional conversion, you know, they start with priests and then wait some time, but did they ordain you as a priest or an elder? Or?
So I was ordained as a priest, because I was in high school still.
Okay.
Then about a month later, I was ordained an elder. Actually, it was a couple months later, right before I went to BYU for my freshman year.
Oh, cool. So you tell us about day two of being a member of the church. Like, you have the priesthood now. You are, I mean, maybe or that next following Sunday. What was that experience like? What thoughts went through your mind? What feelings did you feel?
Well, my grandfather, he confirmed me, and he really bestowed upon me some really wonderful blessings.
And then after I got the priesthood, he was right there with me when I blessed the sacrament for the first time. And then actually, I think probably every week after that, I was up there either blessing or passing the sacrament. And that was really special.
Cool.
And then shortly after that, I went to the temple for the first time. And yeah, I mean, it just all felt right.
Cool. And then you went on a mission, and probably felt good to be able to just take the steps that your other friends were doing, going on a mission.
Yeah. That did really feel right. There were some times I did feel like maybe I could have. I mean, it would have been great if I was raised in the church from an early age when I was teaching family sometimes on my mission, but a few months in, I really felt like I had the experiences and of course the testimony necessary to do really well on my mission.
Cool. So there were scenarios where, I mean, were you pretty open with people saying, you know, I actually got baptized, 2 years ago or.
Yeah.
And that maybe helped you relate to those individuals a little bit more.
Yeah, totally. That did help a lot, actually.
Cool. So you're now a return for your mission back at BYU, and of course you're in the typical BYU YSA ward where the bishop is asking the congregation every week, why aren't you married yet, right?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Well, I guess that's the typical thing, right?
Right. Yeah. So I assume you have plans to get married at some point in your life.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a top priority. To be married in the temple, because it's a covenant with God. Like I do know it's important. Like, I don't think I stress out about it nearly as much as some people. Eh? And I really do think that it'll happen when it happens, and I'll meet the person I'm supposed to meet, and I'll make that covenant when it's the right time.
All right. Well, if there are any young, beautiful ladies out there would like to submit an application, I will forward that on to Jacob. And
oh my gosh,
I'm just kidding. So, but in regards to being married, obviously you plan, I'm assuming you plan on a temple marriage. Is that going to bring up even more feelings and situations that need to be reconciled with your family or your father?
Well, I know just speaking with my mom recently that she's planning on getting to the point where she can be in the temple when I'm married. And that's
fantastic.
That's a huge step. It's been a long time coming for her. My father, I assume that will probably be there, and it'll be something that we'll have to talk about, I'm sure. But I know that I know at this point, because he's happy with the place I'm in already, I think it'll be all right.
Awesome. So looking back at your youth time and being in this ward, the leadership you interacted with, the friends and family that supported you, any regrets you have or anything we haven't talked about that would be worth mentioning about that experience that may help other people going through a similar situation?
Well, one of the things I didn't mention earlier was that there were quite a few families who I feel really took it upon themselves in order to help me out. Like I'm not sure if they were assigned by the Bishop Rick or anything to really reach out to me, but the first couple of years of going to church, I had a friend and his family really helped. And it really, I went over there every Saturday night and I rode over to church with them. After a while, that's what I did. And they just really assumed that responsibility. They would call me up on Saturday and I would be over with them in church the next day. And they were totally open about it. They were happy to help, but at the same time, I never really felt that like they were doing this in order to get me to church. They were my friends, and they're my close friends still today. My friend who was the son in that family is actually my best friend here at school. And then there was another family, of course, that I lived with for a couple of years after when my family was going through a tough time, and they completely just assumed that responsibility. That's something that's I'll forever be grateful for. So I would say that just the more that we can do all we can to maybe seek revelation in order to help those out that need it, and maybe assuming a little bit of an extra responsibility in order to reach out to people, because really I had those strong relationships as well as my strong testimony of the gospel, and I think that that's why it worked out for me.
That concludes my interview with Jacob Khalil. What an inspiring interview. What an inspiring young man. And I'm so grateful that he was willing to share his story. And I hope that it impacts the way that you serve as a youth leader, as a bishop, or any, or even just being a member in your ward that has a youth or an individual who comes from a non-traditional Mormon background is looking for a place in the church. Help validate them as an individual in the church and make room for them. And you can see how many lives were blessed in Jacob's story. And bravo to the leaders of his ward and those that really went the extra mile to take it upon themselves to make a difference in Jacob's lives. Now think of the impact he'll have, not only through his mission, through his time at BYU, but on through. I'm sure he'll have opportunities to lead in various capacities, both official and non-official capacities. If you have a question for Jacob, leave a comment on this post. I'll make sure he sees it. But please share this with other youth leaders, with bishops, anybody who would benefit from Jacob's experience and story. And I know it'll bless their life, and it brings such a strong spirit hearing his story and learning from his experience. As always, this podcast doesn't happen just magically. I need some help making it happen. And so if you have a few minutes, go to leadinglds.com/help. And there's a list of ways that you can contribute to Leading LDS. Everything from just giving $1 a month to help me pay for the editing and production and hosting of the site. And we got bigger plans even that I'll go towards. And then also there's various ways that don't take any money that you can help, being part of the Facebook group and on and on. I genuinely appreciate those that contribute in some manner. Until next time, be a leader and not a calling.